in the Ty Boyd studio, and President Biden overseas this morning in the UK. This is not actual footage.
We know, Big Ben.
Parliament.
But he is in merry old England getting set to meet with Boris Johnson, and then Sunday he'll meet with the Queen, and he has a very packed itinerary, does the president. His first international trip, and in London this morning is Fox's Ben Owen.
He arrived yesterday in the UK at a US-UK airbase called Mildenhall, where he addressed US troops who are based in the country, and that's where he first spoke about his intentions for the coming days.
I'm heading to the G7, then to the NATO ministerial, and then to meet with Mr. Putin to let him know what I want him to know. We're going to make it clear that the United States is back.
From there, he moved down to Cornwall, the southwestern tip of England, where 5,000 police are securing the area. Overhead radar systems are in place. Even a naval battleship lies off the coast. But the real threats that President Biden and other leaders of the G7 will be discussing, well, they lie further afield. Cyber attacks originating in Russia, the aggression and oppression of China, not to mention COVID and the potential Chinese cover-up. President Biden, however, says the most dangerous threat is none of the above.
This is not a joke. You know what the Joint Chiefs told us the greatest threat facing America was? Global warming.
President Biden is also going to announce that the U.S. will pay for 500 million doses of Pfizer vaccine for the rest of the world. It's part of his vaccine diplomacy and also a wider push to move away from America first. In the next few hours, President Biden's going to meet his host, Boris Johnson. Then he goes to meet the Queen, following that the NATO summit in Brussels, and then that big summit with Vladimir Putin. Three countries, 8 days, President Biden's first trip abroad, and all eyes on whether or not he can earn the respect of his fellow world leaders at a time when Russia and China really are pushing the boundaries.
We will continue to cover Biden's visit throughout the day, throughout the morning, here on News Talk 1110 WBT. Coming up on 5:09, OTAs continue for the Carolina Panthers and around the National Football League. And new quarterback Sam Darnold facing the media yesterday, talking about what it's been like to be a Charlotte resident so far.
Honestly, it reminds me of home. You have the city. It's starting to, from what I've heard, it's growing rapidly. But where I live, there's kind of a small town feel, which I really like. So there's that, and I guess that kind of reminds me of home. And, it's nice to be able to, walk around. And obviously some people recognize me, and that is what it is. But, it's awesome to be here and call this place home. It is what it is, when people recognize me, if they say hi or want a picture or anything, I'm pretty open to everything. I'm not, going to say no or anything like that. But, I feel like it's the same everywhere, honestly, whether it's Charlotte, New York, L.A., even when I'm home, I feel like it's kind of the same. If people recognize you, they're going to ask for a picture or something like that. So it's kind of the same everywhere I've been.
One thing that players are getting used to once again is the idea of playing with fans. And some of that's being incorporated into Panther practices. But when the fall comes, we know that it'll be full capacity at Bank of America Stadium.
Fans are coming back in 2021, and as players, we're so excited. The game, it's so fun. The game's so fun because of the fans, because of the reactions they give us, if we make a good play or if, the defense makes a good play. So we feed off that energy, and it's awesome. And even, going to, play in a different stadium, it's fun to be able to be the away team. And, if we score, it goes, dead silent. And if we win, the whole stadium's silent and they're walking out of the tunnels maybe early. So it's just fun. All those things are, the fans, like I said before, the fans make this game what it is, and we're excited to have him back.
Sam Darnold, new Panthers QB, talking to the media yesterday, and of course the fans weren't here last year because of COVID-19. The final question in the press conference yesterday came from Joe Person of The Athletic.
Have you been vaccinated, and kind of where do you come down on that?
I haven't been vaccinated yet. Still got to think about, all those certain things that go into it. Again, it's everyone's choice, whether they want to get vaccinated or not. So that's really all I got on it. I don't want to go too into detail, but I haven't been vaccinated yet.
I didn't know if you were sort of, you know, doing some more research on it, or like kind of how will you make an informed decision on that?
Yeah, I have been. I mean, for me, I don't, you know, I'm just staying by myself right now. You know, I don't have a family or anything like that. So, you know, again, there's a ton of different things that go into it. I'm going to evaluate that on my own and, you know, make the best decision that I feel like is, you know, again, the best for myself.
Coming up on News Talk 1110 WBT, our own Brett Jensen goes one-on-one with County Manager Dina DiOrio. From one Brett to another, Brett Jensen had a chance to sit down and go one-on-one with County Manager Dina DiOrio.
Why did you want to do public service, and why specifically county management? Because it's not like a lot of youngsters grow up going, you know what, I want to be a county manager. But yet you specifically went to school for this, because I've looked at your background, and very impressive, especially your grad school, is very impressive school. So how and why?
Well, I think, I mean, if you looked at my background at all, you might know that I actually was a social worker when I first started out when I was in college. And so when I actually was and worked as a social worker, I realized that I didn't really like the clinical aspects of social work, but I really liked the public policy parts of that. And so when I went for my master's of public administration, it was really because I wanted to work in local government from a policy perspective. Now, the whole county manager thing kind of came later, because as I started to work in local government, and then I was a finance director, a budget director, you get to a point in your career where, particularly when you don't work in a manager form of government, you sort of reach the highest that you can, you become the highest ranking non-elected official. That's where I was when I was in Connecticut, the highest ranking non-elected city official. And if I wanted to do more with my career, I had to become a manager. I had to work towards that. And so I didn't start out wanting to be a manager. I didn't really understand that when I first started out. But as you go through your career and you learn more about it, that's sort of where the path that it took me.
I know the attitudes are different. Is politics different between the Northeast and the Southeast?
It's not. I mean, politics is politics, and I think that's why I've been really successful, because I understand sort of how politics works, and I can work in that environment, and it really is very, very similar. The personalities may be different, but politics is pretty much the same.
Now, you do have a Northeastern attitude, which I tend to have a Northeastern attitude.
What does that mean exactly?
Northeastern attitude means that you don't pull punches.
I do not.
You know, it also means that you're direct. But it also means that you're not afraid to voice your opinion or say something, as opposed to backing down. Sometimes people get their feathers ruffled by that. Do you find the same thing sometimes here, where politicians have come up to you or confidants have come up to you and said, Dina, you know, maybe, you know, a little bit more sugar and less this, or you're so direct?
Well, I think overall, no, not really, but I do try to check myself, and sometimes I'll ask one of my colleagues, like I'll write an email and I'll send it to somebody and say, read this before I send it, to make sure that I'm not, you know, stepping over the line. And sometimes they say, oh, you shouldn't send that, and sometimes I say, no, you're fine. So I recognize that I have that, that I could have that impact on people, so I really try to check myself. And the other thing that I will say is that I used to be far more direct when I lived in the Northeast than I am here. So I've toned it down considerably since I've lived in Charlotte.
Well, I mean, that goes to the last few months when, unprovoked, you came out and just went after the city about Tent City and allowing things to happen, and how you reached out to the sheriff and everything else and the city manager. Generally, you don't find people in government that will do that. So did you catch a lot of grief for that?
No, I didn't. You know, it was calculated. I mean, I'll be perfectly honest about that, because people said they wanted to help me and that they were going to help me, and then when needed to help me, they wouldn't, or they didn't, or they couldn't, for whatever reason. And so, you know, that for me, that couldn't go unchecked. I really needed to be able to say, you know, it's not right what's happened here, and that the county's left holding the bag for this, because I think that's what they were hoping, that they were just going to be able to bail and that I wasn't going to do anything about it. And I think the point I made is, don't do that to me, because I will not let you off the hook. When you make a commitment to help me, I expect you to follow through.
You know, between the city manager and Sheriff McFadden, and I mean, there were some, for lack of a better term, daggers thrown.
You know? Absolutely. But, you know, when you're in the battle, sometimes you have to fight hard. So, and that was a very, very, very difficult situation that we were dealing with.
And I think, maybe, correct me if I'm wrong, but probably part of the problem that maybe irked you was the fact that correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't part of that on Tent City, like actually on city property?
Yes, it was.
So that, I mean, I can understand, like, why are we having to take care of something that's on the city property?
Because they were afraid of the optics associated with having police and other folks associated with moving people off of that property. But again, it was their property.
So let's talk about the last 14, 15 months since COVID. The COVID ambassadors, was that you?
That was.
I know a lot of people called them secret police.
Oh, really? I had not heard that.
You really hadn't?
I had not.
Really?
I had not, no.
I think terms Gestapo was being used because that's secret
no.
police.
Okay.
I know a lot of restaurant owners were really upset by this. They felt like a lot of these people were in unmarked clothing.
Right.
Shall you say. And then trying to be very authoritative. Did you guys get any complaints about any of these people? Do you think some of these people maybe were overstepping their bounds or trying to act like they were actually police when they weren't?
You know, I had not heard that. I mean, honestly, you know, we created the ambassador program based on what they did in Las Vegas, and it was really designed to help business owners come into compliance and help them comply with the orders. It was never intended to be overstepping their bounds or any of that. So I had not heard that. So no, we never really got complaints. In fact, we only got really positive feedback about how helpful they were. So it would have been helpful to know that because we would have absolutely intervened if I had known that that was what people were feeling about them.
The not sitting at bar referendum, where you can sit at the bar if you're at the Waffle House, but you can't sit at the bar and eat if you're at Del Frisco's or anywhere else. How much grief did you take for that?
A lot. We took a lot of grief for that one. But again, you know, you go out to dinner, I'm sure, but, you know, you see people when they're at a bar and they're drinking, they tend to sort of cluster. You know, you don't see people clustering at the Waffle House as much as you see people when they're, you know, sitting at a bar having a meal. People. So it really was designed to help people social distance. But yes, we did get a lot of grief for it.
Any regrets on that particular one? Where instead of saying, you know what, you can't order drinks at a bar, but you can sit at a bar. Because you know what people did to get around it, right?
I don't know. I'm sure they did a lot of things to get around it.
They were taking bar tables,
big
round bar tables, pushing them up to the bars, going, oh, well, we're sitting at a table that just happens to be at the bar, and the bartenders were still waiting on them.
Okay, well, I did not heard that either.
That was
but
all over.
Well, I mean, look, we were trying to do the best we could. We were trying to keep people safe, and, you know, we'll see, you know, time will tell us sort of what the after action report says. But I will tell you that one of the things that we are doing is we're hiring a consultant who is going to do an after action report for us and is going to evaluate our response. And it's not, you know, they'll be looking at the county's response, but they'll be talking to, you know, board members, all the people in our policy group, the community, so that we can really understand, you know, what we did well, what we can do better. Hopefully we never have to go through this again, but it is a real opportunity to learn how to manage a crisis. And if we can learn something from it, then that's good. So, I mean, these are some of the things that hopefully will come out of that process.
That's Dina DiOrio, the county manager for Mecklenburg County. Part two of Brett Jensen's interview comes your way next hour, including her biggest regrets during the pandemic. Newstalk 1110 WBT. A very good podcast called Tying It Together. I highly recommend it. Add to your podcast list. You can download it wherever you download podcasts. But he was talking to us yesterday, and he mentioned that this week's conversation of Tying It Together is a sit-down with U.S. Senator Tom Tillis. And one of the things that he talked about that I immediately thought, I got to hear this, is the fact that Tillis talks about sitting down and breaking bread with Cal Cunningham after their hotly contested Senate race ended last fall. And here is that exchange.
I actually felt bad for what Cal's family was going through. I have to say that after the election, he rightfully didn't concede, I think, on election night, although I declared victory. But he called me about 8 days later and was just incredibly gracious with his concession. I wished him well. And since then, we actually were down at Big Ed's a couple of months ago having breakfast together, and I've stayed in contact with him.
But, really?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty sure we're probably the only two opponents in the United States who have broken bread after that kind of an election. But that's the way we need to operate.
I mean, what did the two of you talk about?
Oh, we talked about all kinds of things. Policy, you know, how our families were doing, and how tough the race was. But, you know, we need leaders to step up and exhibit that sort of behavior more, because the part of the reason for the toxic political environment we're in, of course, you reporters are part of it. But then, but it also is, you know, getting past it. You know, campaigns are tough. Campaigns in North Carolina, Senate races are nationalized. So much of what you see, you think I've authorized the message or Cal authorized the message, but they're independent groups that we can't even ask to take ads down because that's a violation of the rules. So,
did you ask them about the barbecue tweet?
Quick time out. This tweet I'm talking about was not long before our debate. It was an image of Cunningham with an apron on that said Ambassador for North Carolina Barbecue. He was standing next to a gas grill, and there were hot dog buns sitting on a plate next to it. Now, if you're not from North Carolina, just know this did not go over well, even with this fellow Democrat. Barbecue is a noun, not a verb, and you definitely don't put it on a hot dog bun. Okay, you get the picture. Back to it.
I did actually during the breakfast. I do think I got a jab in because he brought me barbecue. I said, "Now this is real barbecue, right?" But no, you know, that's the thing that probably a lot of people don't see behind the scenes. But I in the debate, the first debate that we had, he said, "You know, Tom, after all this is all over, we ought to get together and break bread." Pretty sure he was convinced he was going to win at that point. But then we had this thing going before each, including the debate with you, to where we would have great talk before the debate, great talk after the debate. I mean, he was a real gentleman, and I wish him well with the challenges that he had. But I think that we've got to start treating things that way, or have more people step up and behave that way.
U.S. Senator Tom Tillis on the latest episode of Tim Boyum's Tying It Together podcast. News Talk 1110 WBT Sky Show 2021 returns to Truist Field coming up Sunday, July 4th. All the details at WBT.com. No better way to celebrate the 4th of July than with family, friends, Charlotte Knights baseball, and the biggest and best July 4th fireworks show in. And many people listening right now, that was their gateway to the V-Man, was the Charlotte Hornets.
Yeah, that and CCB.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. Charlotte. I loved it. Loved the game. I still watch the playoffs till my eyeballs fall out of my head.
Every time I see Hubie Brown, you know, on TV,
my mentor.
I think about you.
That's my mentor.
Telling those stories about Hubie Brown. And I used to love it when you used to do the games back when you were calling basketball and also had the BT show. And you would do the games from the arena. And every once in a while, if Hubie was there broadcasting for TV or whatever, he'd walk over and sit down with you.
Yeah.
And it was like you were at a professor's.
We used to have endless conversations at the five-star basketball camp where you'd sit there for a couple. He's the guy that helped me design my possession charts for games when he was a. You know, I transferred what he did during games to fit a broadcast. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he was a big influence.
So, I mentioned the Charlotte Hornets. A lot's happened since that soundbite I just played. The team went to New Orleans, and then they became the Pelicans and the Bobcats back here. It came, you know, returned to being the Hornets. Mm-hmm. And now the Hornets made the play-in game this year, but not quite back in the playoffs in recent years. What do you make of the Charlotte Hornets right now?
One, James Brego's a very bright coach. I'm glad they took the option to extend him. He's very, very bright. And I hope they display the patience to build with the same voice and the same style of the teaching. But the roster isn't properly designed as of yet. They must get better at rebounding the basketball. I have a saying, the game is won when the ball is in the air. What are you doing with missed shots? Are you getting second chance opportunities? Or are you defending your glass and not allowing the other team to get them? They're 25th in the league in defensive rebounding. That must be addressed. They have to get bigger on the front line. They need a big body that can police the lane and give you some rim protection, but a go-getter that can go get it. And hopefully, Bo, somebody that can rebound in more than one zip code. And by that I mean someone that can go get the rebound and not just have to have it come to him. They desperately need to fill that position, and they need to improve their jump shooting. They need They need a pure splasher. Now, will that emerge coming into the offseason by offseason skill enhancement? I don't know.
LaMelo Ball fan, are you?
I see moments in him when I go, oh, there's an emerging Bo Thompson's creativity. and I think he is blessed with pounds of potential. And I think he can be very, very good. So, yes, I am a fan for now. Needs a playmate that can finish off his stuff. You need that guy when the ball gets in his hands. Oh, there it is. They also need to sprinkle in, hopefully, in filling some of that talent. Not with rookies.
Yeah.
Guys that have been in the league so you know what you are getting. I have a philosophy. You got to have a guy on the team, guys on the team, that you can have that conversation with. Meaning, an older player that's been around that you could say, what's it like? What was it like those playoffs? About somebody that can keep you in line. And hopefully you can also address that by acquiring two skill sets I had mentioned. And defensively, that'll needs to get better. But that's the difficult part with some young talent.
So what about the NBA? Let's pull out and look at it macro. Is this the Nets to win? I mean, should they even play the rest of the playoffs based on what we're seeing from the Brooklyn Nets right now?
If Harden comes back, I mean, they look terrific right now. Milwaukee's walking around befuddled, dazed and confused. They're like the shower scene in Psycho. You know, tear the curtain back and it's over there. If Harden comes back for the Nets and he's feeling good because that hamstring is chronic, I don't see who could beat them. Philadelphia could possibly punch their lights out. And keep an eye on Atlanta. It's going to depend on Joel Embiid's knee. It all rides on that meniscus. As far as Atlanta's concerned, when McMillan took over, they went nine deep. They changed things. They're tough. They're ornery. But the Nets, when they are cooking, they're getting play from their backups. They're getting play from their primary people.
Blake Griffin. I mean, he's a peripheral player.
That's a perfect example. I'm glad you brought it up, how a change in an atmosphere and surrounding yourself with different people can enhance and rejuvenate your talent. And he's been solid for them. So, and then coming out of the West, roll it. You know, Phoenix, Utah, Denver.
Clippers.
The Clippers. I think it's going to come with a Phoenix or Utah.
Yeah.
They're more complete.
Good luck, whoever has to play the Nets in the finals. Good luck, whoever has to play them, period.
Yeah. Thanks for not asking about my Knicks. I appreciate the respect.
I didn't ask because I wanted to make sure I had time to play this.
Friday night, I'm feeling so right. Got a talk show, baby, give me all what you got, cause you know I'm the free dude. Everybody groove, snap your finger now. Let your backbone slip, now throw out your hip. Back hat, now bang your head. I say, who? Who? Say, who? Who? Can I get any help? Say, who? Flip it, wiggle, hickey, cause I know, my baby.
Eating on is none down the credit. Why? Friday night, and I'm feeling so good, cause I got Joe in the neighborhood.
I'm a white man. Call me honky, but I know that I'm the funk cat. That is right. Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Oh, my God. Help me.
There goes my Friday night. I got to get a phone call going. Second thought, I don't think I can join you. Tell the people.
Man.
Ad-lib. Right, baby?
Oh. How do you ad-lib when I listen to that? I hadn't heard that thing in years.
Yeah, I know.
Well, I tell you what. If you want to hear some more Jerry V ad-libbing.
One day, maybe I come in here and a couple of... By the way, don't call me again to do the show. You know how people always go, hey, if you ever need anything, have me on. Don't call me anymore. But... You know, you got to tell them there is a serious side. Am I right, John?
That's right.
That's right. But I'm talking about that you won't.
All right, real quick. You actually are going to be at the Comedy Zone.
Yeah, July 6th.
Speaking of serious guy Jerry V, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Sure. Just working on my image.
July 6th.
Yeah. I'm just trying to figure out what material to use because it's been canceled three times because of COVID, and I have so much material written. I got a list of things I want to do in life, and I just check off the boxes.
And what you just did was bucket list, right?
That's right. Well, yeah, I guess I called it the V list.
Yes.
So, and my goal is to do a one-hour comedy show here in Charlotte, straight.
Or a second one after this one.
Oh, I'll do a second
one. I mean, after this show.
Confidence.
This show.
How successful you will be in any endeavor, Bo, is directly related to how easy you are intimidated. Do not be intimidated.
And I'll just end by saying, love, live, and laugh, because...
It's a short pony ride. John, it's great to see you. Bo, thank you so much.
We'll do it again.
Thank you.
Hey, come again sometime.
No, don't call me. I'm very busy.
Again, I say good morning, Bo Thompson, along with Marsha Landis. She is our market manager, general manager of Radio One, and she is in studio with Dan Rakowski, who, of course, is the head man over at the Charlotte Knights, the COO. And Marsha, I'm very excited that you're going to take in Sky Show 2021, because you can't say that you work for WBT until you really have experienced what to me is really the granddaddy of them all as far as promotions that we do and things that are associated with the station, July 4th. So I'm so excited that we can announce today and put full force behind one of our greatest community events.
Well, I have to tell you, I couldn't be more excited for the partnership and to be able to bring it back. I literally, since I've walked in the door, I've heard about this. And so to be in Charlotte and being new to Charlotte, I can't imagine what an amazing night that I'm looking forward to in such a beautiful location. So baseball and fireworks. Can it be any better?
You ready for this?
I'm ready for it.
Ready to get back on the bike?
Goodness, yes. We had a year off, and it was tough. But welcome back. You know, Marsha mentioned this partnership. We've been doing this a number of years, 16 now, I think. And, of course, Sky Show goes much further back than that. But with the Knights, it's just been wonderful.
Well, you know, it's been around since 1976, and we celebrated the American Centennial, and there was a big celebration back then. And as I've grown up here, Sky Show has evolved. At one point in time, it was at Memorial Stadium, and then we moved it to Uptown. And then, like you say, about 16 years ago, we moved it to Fort Mill when the Knights were playing there down the highway a bit, and it became a great event there. We had all kinds of interest, and the first few years I was on the air doing this, I got to experience what was going on down there. But then when I heard, and this was like yesterday to me, that the Charlotte Knights were coming back home to Uptown Charlotte at then what was BB&T Ballpark and now is Truist Field, I thought, I know where this is all going, Dan Rakowski. And sure enough, I can now say that for the last several years, Sky Show has been right there in the heart of Uptown, and we're back. And again, Marsha, this is like what we're doing here is what's happening all across America. It's the reopening of America, and it feels good to be back out doing things. And this really makes it official to me.
And we are ready, right? Everyone's ready to be out and with people and doing what we do, and that is celebrating. Celebrating July 4th, celebrating being with friends and family. And again, how better than at Truist Field of baseball, right?
Well, we always say, Dan Rakowski, it's family, it's friends, it's baseball, and it's fireworks. And when you combine all of those things, WBT is already helping out sponsor Friday Night Fireworks, as we've done for many years. But this Sunday, July 4th, this is where we take it to a new level. And I have a feeling that the fact that we didn't have one last year, this is going to make everybody up it even a little bit more than we're even used to coming up on Sunday, July 4th.
Well, I think you're right. And, you know, we've noticed over the last couple of weeks since we went to 100% at our facility, just the enthusiasm that people have had to come out. And this past weekend, actually, on Friday night, was one of the – you couldn't paint a better picture of a great crowd, about 7,000 people, which we're not – getting there yet, but and then the team won, exciting manner, and then we had fireworks afterwards, and I finally said, after really 18 months of no game day revenue or games, we're back. And I think that July 4th and Sky Show is going to celebrate that. We're excited for the community. This has always been, I phrase it as a gift to the community, is that we've been able to you know, put 10,000 people in the ballpark, but other people have seen that from their windows, you know, and this is... this is something we're really looking forward to.
Well, and it's the greatest backdrop, in my opinion, in Charlotte. You come out to a game, any game, come out to the game and sit back and watch baseball, but you have the backdrop of the city, and then when the sun goes down, then you have the backdrop of all the lights, and then with the fireworks, then you see the fireworks reflecting off the building. And I always sit back on July 4th, and I just kind of take a breath. I usually am about 5 feet away from you, because that's the point of the day when the fireworks go off where Dan Rakowski can say, "Hi." right, we've done it all. It's finally here. The plan has come together. There's Matt DuBois on the field giving us the signal. But I'm really excited for Marcia to see this, too, because it really is a moment where you sit back, and not just as a Knights employee, but as he said, it's a gift to the city. And so all of us here at the station for so many years have felt like this is one of those moments where you see what a station that is on the doorstep of 100 years means to the community, and you see what the Charlotte Knights have become there in Uptown, and you see, of course, what an important holiday this is for so many people, and it's gonna have so much more meaning this year, just no matter where you are. But if you really want to accentuate it, be with us on July 4th, Sunday, WBT and the Charlotte Knights.
Well, and I am just so honored to be here. I'm honored to be with the radio station. I'm honored to be in this city, and I really can't wait. I truly, truly can't wait to see it.
Yeah, since 1976, the year of the bicentennial. I always remember that because you had the quarters, the bicentennial quarters. Thought they were going to be worth so much money. I don't know. I don't know how much they're worth because I don't necessarily have one now, but I just remember back then. Oh, these bicentennial quarters. 1976. The 2021 Sky Show, WBT Sky Show is back. Get all the details at WBT.com. Don't forget our new WBT mobile app. You can download it wherever you download podcasts and apps. Meanwhile, Brett Jensen, WBT News, a one-on-one with County Manager Dina DiOrio.
I know a lot, some of the towns broke away and didn't follow some of the ordinances or the curfews and stuff like that. The prevailing thought was whatever you decided Vi Lyles was immediately going to go along with, and there wasn't going to be much dissension. How much conversations did you have with her about the city of Charlotte?
I didn't speak to her directly, but I spoke to the city manager a lot. So he was at the table the whole time, and he would go back and talk to her. And, you know, they really, I thought they did a really wonderful job of respecting Gibby. And her being the public health director and the incident commander and really understanding what needed to be happening from a public health perspective. And so she was incredibly supportive. And I think the towns were supportive as well. I think the difference is that COVID impacted different parts of the county in different ways. So when you go up north, they didn't have the same level of cases and in the southern part of the county that you had in certain parts of Charlotte. So they were really reacting to what they were seeing on the ground in their specific areas. So, you know, I understand why they decided to make those decisions, and we all supported everybody. I mean, they had to do what made sense for them, and we tried to make sure we continued to provide resources and whatever we could to support that.
Gibby, with your dealings with her over the last 15 months, I mean, I would assume that, you know, every once in a while there was a disagreement on the way things should be handled or whatever. What kind of disagreements did you guys ever have on terms of orders or whatever?
You know, we never disagreed. We talked through everything. And, you know, we always tried to rely on the science and the data. I mean, that's what we always said. We're going to rely on the data. And if the data said this is what we were going to do. Every time we did an order, you know, we looked at what's happening across the country and what other people were doing. But, you know, she's the public health person. I mean, I'm not, right? All I can do is, my job is to support her and her team and make sure she had the resources and everything she needed to be successful. And that's what I really tried to do during this, which is why after a while I sort of really backed away from being at media availabilities and all that, because I didn't need to be there anymore, and I don't need to be the face of that. She really is the face of it, and she was doing a really, really, really good job. Tremendous amount of respect from the community. So, you know, I wanted her to do her thing.
What do you regret that you did or didn't do over the last 15 months?
Well, I think what we did really well is when we did decide that we were going to do the stay-at-home order first in the state. I think that was what really got the ball rolling, and I think we did the right thing there. I think the part that we didn't do well was we didn't recognize soon enough the way COVID was impacting the community from a racial disparity perspective. I think we were a little late in recognizing that. And so that's something that I think we're much more in tune now to as well.
Let's talk about the situation that happened at Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
So I just remember thinking to myself, I was like, did I just hear that?
I know what I did. And so, you know, I guess, yeah, I mean, that's a moment I should take back for sure. But, you know, that was a personal decision that I made. But I'm also, if nothing, I'm also very transparent, and I'm not going to not tell the truth. I could have said it differently. As I go back in my mind, I said to myself, you know, you could have answered that question 10 different ways and not have answered it that way, and nobody would have been the wiser. But that's just not the kind of person I am. And so
Well, I think what surprised me the most was I was in queue and I was like six questions down the line and no one brought it up. I was like, wait, what? But, you know, but
it's like I talked out of that side of my mouth and then I talked out of that side of my mouth.
Speaking to the head of the communications department here, when we were talking about you, he said, look, you need to understand this about Dina. Dina wants everything transparent. She wants everything known, and she doesn't want secrets hidden from her, and she doesn't want secrets hidden from the public. Where did that come from? Why? Because that's an anomaly in government.
Because maybe it's just a function of my personality. I don't know, but you only get in trouble when you don't tell. I mean, and I think part of it though too. I think we learned that, or I learned that a little bit when we had the issue with the cervical cancer screenings. And there were some pieces of information that we didn't tell the public because we were trying to protect people from panic. So there's a fine line that you have to balance between telling the public what's going on but trying to protect people, you know, people's privacy, as well as making sure people don't panic. And so I think I did feel a little bit like in that situation we probably could have told more sooner. So that was a lesson learned for me, and I've tried to carry that forward in situations that have come up since then.
Where do you see this county going in the future? I know there was a lot of people that were upset when they decided to redo property taxes. And so what do you see going forward in terms of taxes, in terms of parks, in terms of everything? And I know that's a very broad question, but what do you see happening in the near future, say the next 5 years?
Well, I think from an economic perspective, you talk about, you know, revaluation. You know, we're going to be doing that every 4 years now instead of once every 8 years as required by law. So I think, you know, we won't have those swings like we had in the past. So I think we've worked through some of that, and I think that's going to be good for the community. I mean, if you look out and you see all the cranes, I mean, economics here are strong. So I feel good about financially where the county's going to be as we go forward. I don't anticipate, of course, you never know, another recession or whatever could happen. But even through the pandemic, you know, you look back now and economically we're strong, if not stronger, than we were before, despite certain industries that have been disproportionately impacted. So I feel good about that. I think that our focus is going to be really on our MEC playbook, which is our strategic plan for parks. That's going to be finalized in the next couple of months. And I think there's going to be a really good push and focus on trying to implement as much as we can in that Parks Master Plan, because that's obviously a priority for the community. I think the plan is really good. I think it gives us a really good blueprint. So I think people are going to start to see us making some significant investments there. I think we're going to continue to work really hard on issues around the homeless. Tent City and other situations we've always done that, but I think there's opportunities for us to do more. We're going to be working a lot on that. We're continue to work on our early childhood education initiatives because I think those are really important. I think those are game changers for families. So I think we're going to continue a lot of the things that we've been working on in the past, and hopefully we'll, you know, have the money to be able to do some really good things.
In terms of future for Dina DiIorio, You're in Charlotte long term. Do you ever think about, you know what, maybe go to a bigger city, bigger state, go to state government, or, you know, New York, wherever, LA? Do you ever think about, you know, moving on to someplace else?
Not today. I love what I'm doing, and as long as I continue to love what I'm doing, then I'm going to stay where I am. But you know, you never know what the future holds. But right now, I'm really happy here. I love Charlotte. I think it's a wonderful place to live.
County Manager Dina DiIorio, one-on-one with our Brett. So happy to welcome back State Treasurer Dale Falwell. Good morning to you.
Good morning, and I always look forward to bow time.
Hey, always looking forward to Dale Falwell time. And we have some things to talk about today. Let me ask you about something that has become a story since you and I last talked a couple of weeks ago, and that is the fact that the governor is, or the state and the governor making that announcement along with Mandy Cohen, about offering incentives not only to people who get vaccinated, but also to people who take people to get vaccinated, and these are in the form of these cash cards. I think the cash card thing may have already expired, but I'm just curious about the idea of the incentives from the government, period. Where do you come down on that? What can you tell us about it?
I don't know much about this program, this particular program that you're referring to. I've been critical, and it would not have mattered if the name was McCrory or Cooper. I was highly critical when the vaccines were first available because they had 8 months to think, have clarity of thought, and have things in the right sequence. And the vaccines, as soon as they hit the street, should have been totally focused on age, and the hotspots. Hotspots, obviously, are educational facilities, adult living places, correctional facilities. Those were the hotspots in North Carolina. And so what we have now is we have vaccines with no arms. And, you know, Johnson & Johnson just reported there's millions of doses of vaccines that are going to expire because of no arms. I'm not sure that rewarding the behavior to do what's right is going to result in actually moving the needle, because the fact is that anybody in this state who has wanted a vaccine has gotten a vaccine.
And one final thing that's also been in the news, not necessarily tangible to you, but it's the kind of thing that could be, are these ransomware attacks that have affected various entities across the country, the pipeline in recent weeks. You and I talked about the gas supply a few weeks ago. And actually this morning, there's a story out of Washington where there are some U.S. congressmen that have been attacked with ransomware hackings. Do you worry about that, working in the state government like you do, that infrastructure that you work around could be compromised at some point? Or are there any special safeguards that you all have put in place to avoid this kind of thing?
Well, you know, when you talk about the net worth of some of these congressmen, that could be real money, in your words.
Adult money? Yes.
Yeah, adult money. Yeah, absolutely. As the keeper of the public purse and the state treasurer in North Carolina, it's not just the pension plan. We're also the state banker. And when you add all this together, it's nearly $250 billion that we manage at the treasurer's office.
Mm-hmm.
That includes the $120 from the billion from the pension plan. And we worry about this all the time. And it's hard to prove a negative, Bo, which means it's hard to prove that you stopped something. But just last week, I wrote a personal note to the CEO of Colonial Pipeline because of the split-second courage that he had to have, because he said, you know, I don't like paying ransom or being bullied, but the fact is I had to think about our country, and especially North Carolina, because it was so critical to us. So these issues are obviously, unfortunately, are going to continue, and that's why it gives me an opportunity to say on your show that I hope that any of your young listeners will consider public service. There are lots of opportunities. Obviously, we have the military, but lots of opportunities in local government and state government, no matter what your subject matter expertise is, no matter what God may have made you better at than anyone else, whether it's technology or finance, there's lots of opportunity to serve. And all of your listeners who are young enough to consider this should really consider public service, because it can be highly rewarding to stop some of this ransomware.
Well, great words there from Dale Falwell. And to your point about things that don't always get all the headlines, they did recover some of the ransomware that was initially paid. Federal officials recovered $2.3 million of the roughly $4.4 million. So that's good news, and we need to see more of that, and hopefully that'll be more of these hacking stories that come down the line. I got to stop it there. Dale Falwell, always good to talk to you. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Well, thank you for having me on, and thank you for informing the people of the Charlotte community, not just affirming how they already might feel about a certain subject.
This is House Call for Health. If you're like many Americans, you might like going to the coffee shop for that morning jolt of caffeine.
Fred.
Or perhaps you enjoy a nice cold soda for your fix. But if you have too much caffeine, you could be doing damage to your eyes. Researchers at Mount Sinai Hospital's School of Medicine say for those with a genetic predisposition to or family history of glaucoma, too much caffeine creates high risk for intraocular pressure. Scientists accessed the UK's biobank for 120,000 participants between 2006 and 2010. High caffeine intake didn't create a glaucoma risk for everyone, but for those with predisposition or family history, history, higher risk of elevated eye pressure was seen. The highest genetic risk was for those who had 321 milligrams of caffeine a day. That's about 3 cups of coffee. Glaucoma is the leading cause of blindness in the U.S. The study was published in the June print issue of Ophthalmology. For more health news, go to foxnewshealth.com. House call for health. I'm Lisa Brady. Fox.
We'll begin by going back to the market close on Wednesday.
Stocks traded lower with financial, industrial, and consumer sectors edging lower, while healthcare and technology rose. The Dow down 152 points, the S&P lower by 7, the NASDAQ down 13. Investors are weighing the possibility of an economic overheating and higher inflation and higher taxes. Meme stocks continued their popularity, with clean energy fuels jumping more than 30%. Clover Health, which had jumped 85% last week, pulled back 23%. Meanwhile, GameStop, the ultimate meme stock, announced it was naming a former Amazon executive, Matt Furlong, to the CEO seat. In New York, Jerry Willis, Fox News.
Get ready for a wild wedding season. Lillian Wu.
This wedding season could be an unprecedented one as COVID restrictions loosen and couples rush to tie the knot in front of vaccinated family and friends. Shelley Silver of Platinum Event Management.
People are getting engaged and happy to be able to have their families with them. We're seeing more and more couples coming in for short-term weddings and others who are really willing to plan ahead.
How far ahead? Some in the industry say into late 2022 and even the following year due to high demand for venue and vendors who are not only fielding calls from new clients, but also those who postpone their weddings and those who want to celebrate low-key weddings they had during lockdown.
Yeah, well, we talked about the fact that some people are having memorial services a year later that couldn't have them last year. Same thing with weddings, but now you add on top of that with the wedding part of it is actually having a second wedding because the first one wasn't big enough. All right, 6:53. Biggest need at airports these days is actually on the ground.
Darby LaJoy, acting TSA administrator, says the staffing strain will likely be felt at 131 of the country's largest airports. The Washington Post reports major hubs, Denver, St. Louis, Detroit, Boston, and Washington Dulles, are already short of anticipated staff by as much as a tenth. Part of the problem is that nearly as many TSA agents have left their positions since the start of the year as have been hired. The hope is for about 3,000 more hires by the end of the summer. LaJoy noted the travelers screened on the Friday before Memorial Day, nearly 2 million. That's the highest since the pandemic was declared.
And then Tennessee. At one Tennessee college, it'll cost you not to have gotten the shot. As explained by Rob Dawson.
Rhodes College in Memphis says unvaccinated students will have to pay $1,500 a semester or $3,000 a year for a health and safety fee. It's to cover the cost of mandatory testing for COVID-19. The school says it's simply shifting strategy from weekly and biweekly testing to vaccinations. Vice President for Student Life, Megan Hart Wayan, tells the Daily Memphian newspaper that unvaccinated students will still need to be tested regularly. She says the response to the policy has been positive. Positive, and that most students, faculty, and staff have already gotten the shot.
And finally, the Big D loves the NFL, but I'm not talking about Dallas. Instead of Dallas, try Deutsche.
Football trivia. Name the country outside of North America that is the NFL's number one market for NFL shop sales, fantasy football participation, and sales of the Madden NFL video game. The answer, Germany, according to the NFL, which today began a process to find a host city and stadium for future regular season games to get played in Germany as part of the NFL's international series. TV viewership of NFL games in Germany up 20% annually since 2017. Super Bowl 55 in February set a ratings record in Germany, which has been home to several teams who competed in the NFL Europe and World Leagues. As well, the NFL played preseason games in Germany from 1990 to 94.
Deutsche. I took 6 years of German. I know how it works. Pre-market activity, although I can't say what I'm about to say in German, so what do I really have to show for it? Pre-market activity this morning, Dow futures up 83, S&P futures up 3, NASDAQ futures down 38.25. 6:56 on News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT on this Thursday morning, June 10th. Time for the Rush Limbaugh Morning Update.
Hey, folks, a new Silicon Valley startup could change the way your pizza is made and may change the food industry forever. Zume Pizza, Z-U-M-E, has gotten rid of a key business component that all their competitors use, humans. When a pie is ordered, the pizza goes down a conveyor line and robots add the ingredients. And more innovations are coming. Soon the pizza will actually be made inside the delivery vans on the way to the customer's address. Each van's equipped with robots, 56 remote-controlled ovens. They await approval from the Santa Clara County Department of Environmental Health. Alex Garden, a co-founder of the startup, comes from a background in video games, and he says that the company's goal is to become the Amazon of food. It could be extremely profitable, he says, if they can bring their innovations to others in the food service industry. Now, if this works out, he's right. One big reason, the robot workforce doesn't complain. You don't have to worry about them showing up late or needing family time off to take the dog to the vet. Robots don't take maternity leave because they don't get pregnant. They're not confused about their gender, nor do they demand special rights to express who they are that day. And they're not going to demand $15 an hour to make pizza or anything else. A whole lot of companies would want a slice of that business model.
More Rush Limbaugh today. The Rush Limbaugh Show, hosted by Brett Winterbull, starts at noon here on W with British Prime Minister Boris Johnson. Talk about bilateral issues. This is President Biden's first foreign trip, and he'll head through Great Britain, and then by the end of this, Russia. In fact, the itinerary as we know it right now, let's go to London, get an update from Benjamin Hall.
He arrived yesterday in the UK at a US-UK airbase called Mildenhall, where he addressed US troops who are based in the country. And that's where he first spoke about his intentions for the coming days.
I'm heading to the G7, then to the NATO ministerial, and then to meet with Mr. Putin to let him know what I want him to know. We're going to make it clear that the United States is back.
From there, he moved down to Cornwall, the southwestern tip of England, where 5,000 police are securing the area. Overhead radar systems are in place. Even a naval battleship lies off the coast. But the real threats that President Biden and other leaders of the G7 will be discussing, well, they lie further afield. Cyber attacks originating in Russia, the aggression and oppression of China, not to mention COVID and the potential Chinese cover-up. President Biden, however, says the most dangerous threat is none of the above.
Not a joke. You know what the Joint Chiefs told us the greatest threat facing America was? Global warming.
President Biden is also going to announce that the U.S. will pay for 500 million doses of Pfizer vaccine for the rest of the world. It's part of his vaccine diplomacy and also a wider push to move away from America first. In the next few hours, President Biden's going to meet his host, Boris Johnson. Then he goes to meet the Queen. Following that, the NATO summit in Brussels and then that big summit with Vladimir Putin. Three countries, 8 days, President Biden's first trip abroad, and all eyes on whether or not he can earn the respect of his fellow world leaders at a time when Russia and China really are pushing the boundaries.
I guess what we do is just drive around this circle here. It should be the second left exit. There's the hotel. Hey, look, kids! There's Big Ben and there's Parliament!
There it is, there it is, there it is!
I know. I can't seem to get over to the left, honey. I'll try next time. Sorry. We'll get out of this jam in a minute. Kids! Big Ben! Parliament! Again.
We know Big Ben.
Parliament.
Parliament. 7:09 on WBT, back here in the States, and more specifically, at Panthers practice yesterday, OTAs continue. Sam Darnold, new Panthers quarterback, talking to the media, among other things, about living in Charlotte so far.
Honestly, it reminds me of home. You have the city. It's starting to, from what I've heard, it's growing rapidly. Kind of where I live, there's kind of a small town feel, which I really like. So there's that, and I guess that kind of reminds me of home. And, it's nice to be able to, walk around. And obviously some people recognize me, and that is what it is. But, it's awesome to be here and call this place home. It is what it is. When people recognize me, if they say hi or want a picture or anything, I'm pretty open to everything. I'm not, going to say no or anything like that. But, it's, I feel like it's the same everywhere, honestly, you know, whether it's Charlotte, New York, L.A., even when I'm home, I feel like it's kind of the same. You know, if people recognize you, they're going to ask for a picture or something like that. So it's kind of the same everywhere I've been.
It's coming full circle, you know. John Fox, it is what it is. Now you have the quarterback. I heard two it is what it is in that cut. Didn't you, John Moore?
Yeah,
I heard two of them.
Yeah.
Also of note, getting ready for fans to be back in stadiums where Sam Darnold will play.
You know, fans are coming back in 2021, and as players, we're so excited. You know, the game, it's so fun. You know, the game's so fun because of the fans, you know, because of the reactions they give us, you know, if we make a good play or if, you know, the defense makes a good play. So we feed off that energy, and it's awesome. And even, you know, going to, you know, play in a different stadium. You know, it's fun to be able to be the away team, and, you know, if we score, it goes, you know, dead silent, and if we win, you know, the whole stadium's silent, and they're walking out of the tunnels maybe early, so it's just fun. All those things are, you know, the fans, like I said before, the fans make this game what it is, and we're excited to have them back.
And perhaps the most notable exchange during this presser yesterday came right at the end. This is Joe Person from The Athletic.
Have you been vaccinated, and kind of where do you come down on that?
I haven't been vaccinated yet. You know, still got to think about, you know, all those certain things that go into it. Again, it's everyone's choice whether they want to get vaccinated or not. So that's really all I got on it. I don't want to go too into detail, but yeah, I haven't been vaccinated yet.
I didn't know if you were sort of, you know, doing some more research on it, or like kind of how will you make an informed decision on that?
Yeah, I have been. I mean, for me, I don't, you know, I'm just staying by myself right now. You know, I don't have a family or anything like that. So, you know, again, there's a ton of different things that go into it. I'm going to evaluate that on my own and, you know, make the best decision that I feel like is, you know, again, the best for myself.
New Panthers quarterback Sam Darnold talking to the media yesterday. Before we go to traffic, let's go back to the UK, check in with Joe Biden here.
It's Big Ben Kids Parliament. I don't know. He's...
7:13 on. It's a WBT exclusive with Brett Jensen, a one-on-one interview with County Manager Dina DiOrio. And in part one of his conversation, some talk about how she got to be where she is.
Why did you want to do public service, and why specifically county management? Because it's not like a lot of youngsters grow up going, you know what, I want to be a county manager. But yet you specifically went to school for this, because I've looked at your background, and very impressive, especially your grad school, is very impressive schools. So how and why?
Well, I think, I mean, if you looked at my background at all, you might know that I actually was a social worker when I first started out when I was in college. And so when I actually was and worked as a social worker, I realized that I didn't really like the clinical aspects of social work, but I really liked the public policy parts of that. And so when I went for my master's of public administration, it was really because I wanted to work in local government from a policy perspective. Now, the whole county manager thing kind of came later, because as I started to work in local government, and then I was a finance director, a budget director, you get to a point in your career where, particularly when you don't work in a manager form of government, you sort of reach the highest that you can, you become the highest ranking non-elected official. That's where I was when I was in Connecticut, the highest ranking non-elected city official. And if I wanted to do more with my career, I had to become a manager. I had to work towards that. And so I didn't start out wanting to be a manager. I didn't really understand that when I first started out. But as you go through your career and you learn more about it, that's sort of where the path that it took me.
I know the attitudes are different. Is politics different between the Northeast and the Southeast?
It's not. I mean, politics is politics, and I think that's why I've been really successful, because I understand sort of how politics works, and I can work in that environment, and it really is very, very similar. The personalities may be different, but politics is pretty much the same.
Now, you do have a Northeastern attitude, which I tend to have a Northeastern attitude.
What does that mean exactly?
Northeastern attitude means that you don't pull punches.
I do not.
You know, it also means that you're direct. But it also means that you're not afraid to voice your opinion or say something, as opposed to backing down. sometimes people get their feathers ruffled by that. Do you find the same thing sometimes here, where politicians will come up to you or confidants will come up to you and say, Dina, you know, maybe, you know, a little bit more sugar and less this, or you're so direct?
Well, I think overall, no, not really. But I do try to check myself. And sometimes I'll ask one of my colleagues, like I'll write an email and I'll send it to somebody and say, read this before I send it to make sure that I'm not, you know, stepping over the line. And sometimes they say, oh, you shouldn't send that. And sometimes I say, no, you're fine. So I recognize that I have that, that I could have that impact on people. So I really try to check myself. And the other thing that I will say is that I used to be far more direct when I lived in the Northeast than I am here. So I've toned it down considerably since I've lived in Charlotte.
Well, I mean, that goes to the last few months when, unprovoked, you came out and just went after the city about Tent City and allowing things to happen and how you reached out to the sheriff and everything else and the city manager. Generally, you don't find government people in government that will do that. So did you catch a lot of grief for that?
No, I didn't. You know, it was calculated. I mean, I'll be perfectly honest about that, because people said they wanted to help me and that they were going to help me, and then when I needed to help me, they wouldn't, or they didn't, or they couldn't for whatever reason. And so, you know, that for me, that couldn't go unchecked. I really needed to be able to say, you know, it's not right what's happened here, and that the county's left holding the bag for this, because I think that's what they were hoping, that they were just going to be able to bail and that I wasn't going to do anything about it. And I think the point I made is, don't do that to me, because I will not let you off the hook. When you make a commitment to help me, I expect you to follow through.
You know, between the city manager and Sheriff McFadden, and I mean, there were some, for lack of a better term, daggers thrown.
You know? Absolutely. But, you know, when you're in the battle, sometimes you have to fight hard. So, and that was a very, very, very difficult situation that we were dealing with.
And I think maybe, correct me if I'm wrong, but probably part of the problem that maybe irked you was the fact that, correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't part of that on Tent City, like actually on city property?
Yes, it was.
So that, I mean, I can understand, like, why are we having to take care of something that's on the city property?
Because they were afraid of the optics associated with having police and other folks associated with moving people off of that property. But again, it was their property.
So let's talk about the last 14, 15 months.
Mm-hmm.
Since COVID. The COVID ambassadors. Was that you?
That was.
I know a lot of people called them secret police.
Oh, really? I had not heard that.
You really hadn't?
I had not.
Really?
I had not, no.
I think terms Gestapo was being used, because that's secret
no.
police.
Okay.
I know a lot of restaurant owners were really upset by this. They felt like a lot of these people were in unmarked clothing,
right,
shall you say, and then trying to be very authoritative. Did you guys get any complaints about any of these people? Do you think some of these people maybe were overstepping their bounds or trying to act like they were actually police when they weren't?
You know, I had not heard that. I mean, honestly, you know, we created the ambassador program based on what they did in Las Vegas, and it was really designed to help business owners come into compliance and help them comply with the orders. It was never intended to be overstepping their bounds or any of that. So I had not heard that. So no, we never really got complaints. In fact, we only got really positive feedback about how helpful they were. So it would have been helpful to know that, because we would have absolutely intervened if I had known that that was what people were feeling about them.
The not sitting at bar referendum, where you can sit at the bar if you're at the Waffle House, but you can't sit at the bar and eat if you're at Del Frisco's or anywhere else. How much grief did you take for that?
A lot. We took a lot of grief for that one. But again, you know, when you, I mean, I don't know, you go out to dinner, I'm sure, but, you know, you see people when they're at a bar and they're drinking, they tend to sort of cluster. You know, you don't see people clustering at the Waffle House as much as you see people when they're, you know, sitting at a bar having a meal. People. So it really was designed to help people social distance. But yes, we did get a lot of grief for it.
Any regrets on that particular one, where instead of saying, you know what, you can't order drinks at a bar, but you can sit at a bar? Because you know what people did to get around it, right?
I don't know. I'm sure they did a lot of things to get around it.
They were taking bar tables,
yeah,
round bar tables, mm-hmm, pushing them up to the bars,
oh,
going, oh, well, we're sitting at a table that just happens to be at the bar, and the bartenders were still waiting on them.
Okay, well, I did not hear that either.
That was
but
all over.
Well, I mean, look, we were trying to do the best we could. We were trying to keep people safe, and, you know, we'll see, you know, time will tell us sort of what the after action report says. But I will tell you that one of the things that we are doing is we're hiring a consultant who is going to do an after action report for us and is going to evaluate our response. And it's not, you know, they'll be looking at the county's response, but they'll be talking to, you know, board members, all the people in our policy group, the community, so that we can really understand, you know, what we did well, what we can do better. Hopefully we never have to go through this again, but it is a real opportunity to learn how to manage a crisis. And if we can learn something from it, then that's good. So, I mean, these are some of the things that hopefully will come out of that process.
That's the voice of Dina DiOrio, the county manager in Mecklenburg County, part of an exclusive one-on-one with...
He said iced tea day, right?
Yeah.
Not iced tea day. Got to put that D on the end there. Hey, I was talking to Tim Boyum about this time yesterday, and he, of course, hosts Capital Tonight on Spectrum News. He also has a podcast called Tying It Together, and he was telling me about this conversation he had this week with U.S. Senator Tom Tillis. And towards the end of the podcast, he actually talks to Tillis about the time Tillis had breakfast with Cal Cunningham following the election. And ever since he said that, the idea of that conversation being a fly on the wall has fascinated me. And so I checked out the podcast last night, and you got to hear the end of this.
I actually felt bad for what Cal's family was going through. I have to say that after the election, he rightfully didn't concede, I think, on election night, although I declared victory. But he called me about 8 days later and was just incredibly gracious with his concession. I wished him well. And since then, we actually were down at Big Ed's a couple of months ago having breakfast together, and I've stayed in contact with him.
But, really?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty sure we're probably the only two opponents in the United States who have broken bread after that kind of an election. But that's the way we need to operate. I mean,
what did the two of you talk about?
Oh, we talked about all kinds of things. Policy, you know, how our families were doing, and how tough the race was. But, you know, we need leaders to step up and exhibit that sort of behavior more, because part of the reason for the toxic political environment we're in, of course, you reporters are part of it. But then, but it also is, getting past it. You know, campaigns are tough. Campaigns in North Carolina, Senate races are nationalized. So much of what you see, you think I've authorized the message or Cal authorized the message, but they're independent groups that we can't even ask to take ads down because that's a violation of the rules. So,
did you ask him about the barbecue tweet?
Quick time out. This tweet I'm talking about was not long before our debate. It was an image of Cunningham with an apron on that said Ambassador for North Carolina Barbecue. He was standing next to a gas grill, and there were hot dog buns sitting on a plate next to it. Now, if you're not from North Carolina, just know this did not go over well, even with this fellow Democrat. Barbecue is a noun, not a verb, and you definitely don't put it on a hot dog bun. Okay, you get the picture. Back to it.
I did actually during the breakfast, I do think I got a jab at him because he brought me barbecue. I said, "Now this is real barbecue, right?" But no, you know, that's the thing that probably a lot of people don't see behind the scenes. But I in the debate, the first debate that we had, he said, "You know, Tom, after all this is all over, we ought to get together and break bread." Pretty sure he was convinced he was going to win at that point. But then we had this thing going before each, including the debate with you, to where we would have great talk before the debate, great talk after the debate. I mean, he was a real gentleman, and I wish him well with the challenges that he had. But I think that we've got to start treating things that way, or have more people step up and behave that way.
That's Tom Tillis, U.S. Senator, North Carolina, talking to our buddy Tim Boyum, who hosts the Tying It Together podcast for Spectrum News. What a fascinating story there about Cunningham and Tillis having breakfast after that heated election last fall. 7:42.
We used to have endless conversations at the five-star basketball camp where you'd sit there for a cut. He's the guy that helped me design my possession charts for games when he was, you know, I transferred what he did during games to fit a broadcast. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he was a big influence.
So I mentioned the Charlotte Hornets. A lot's happened since that soundbite I just played. The team went to New Orleans, and then they became the Pelicans and the Bobcats back here. It came, you know, returned to being the Hornets, and now the Hornets made the play-in game this year, but not quite back in the playoffs in recent years. Well, what do you make of the Charlotte Hornets right now?
One, James Brego's a very bright coach. I'm glad they took the option to extend him. He's very, very bright. And I hope they display the patience to build with the same voice and the same style of the teaching. But the roster isn't properly designed as of yet. They must get better at rebounding the basketball. I have a saying, the game is won when the ball is in the air. What are you doing with missed shots? Are you getting second-chance opportunities? Are you defending your glass and not allowing the other team to get them? They're 25th in the league in defensive rebounding. That must be addressed. They have to get bigger on the front line. They need a big body that can police the lane and give you some rim protection, but a go-getter that can go get it. And hopefully, Bo, somebody that can rebound in more than one zip code. And by that I mean someone that can go get the rebound and not just have to have it come to him. They desperately need to fill that position, and they need to improve their jump shooting. They need a pure splasher. Now, will that emerge coming into the offseason by offseason skill enhancement? I don't know.
LaMelo Ball fan, are you?
I see moments in him when I go, oh, as an emerging Bo Thompson's creativity. And I think he is blessed with pounds of potential. And I think he can be very, very good. So, yes, I am a fan for now. Needs a playmate that can finish off his stuff. You need that guy when the ball gets in his hands. Oh, there it is. They also need to sprinkle in, hopefully, in filling some of that talent. Not with rookies.
Yeah.
Guys that have been in the league, so you know what you are getting. I have a philosophy. You got to have a guy on the team, guys on the team, that you can have that conversation with. Meaning, an older player that's been around that you could say, what's it like? What was it like those playoffs? About somebody that can keep you in line. And hopefully you can also address that by acquiring two skill sets I had mentioned. And defensively, that'll needs to get better. But that's the difficult part with some young talent.
So what about the NBA? Let's pull out and look at it macro. Is this the Nets to win? I mean, should they even play the rest of the playoffs based on what we're seeing from the Brooklyn Nets right now?
If Harden comes back, I mean, they look terrific right now. Milwaukee's walking around befuddled, dazed and confused. They're like the shower scene in Psycho. You know, tear the curtain back and it's over there. If Harden comes back for the Nets and he's feeling good, because that hamstring is chronic, I don't see who could beat them. Philadelphia could possibly punch their lights out. And keep an eye on Atlanta. It's going to depend on Joel Embiid's knee. It all rides on that meniscus. As far as Atlanta's concerned, when McMillan took over, they went nine deep. They changed things. They're tough. They're ornery. But the Nets, when they are cooking, they're getting play from their backups. They're getting play from their primary people.
Blake Griffin. I mean, he's a peripheral player.
That's a perfect example. I'm glad you brought it up, how a change in an atmosphere and surrounding yourself with different people can enhance and rejuvenate your talent. And he's been solid for them. So, and then coming out of the West, roll it. You know, Phoenix, Utah, Denver.
Clippers.
The Clippers. I think it's going to come with a Phoenix or Utah.
Yeah.
They're more complete.
Good luck, whoever has to play the Nets in the finals. Good luck, whoever has to play them, period.
Yeah. And thanks for not asking about my Knicks. I appreciate the respect.
I didn't ask because I wanted to make sure I had time to play this.
Friday night, I'm feeling so right. Got a talk show, baby, give me all what you got. Cause you know I'm the free dude. Everybody groove, snap your finger now. Let your backbone slip, now throw out your hip. Back hat, now bang your head. I say, hoo, hoo. Say, hoo, hoo. Can I get any help? Say, hoo, hoo. Flip it, wicked, hickey, cause I know, my baby.
Eating on is none down the credit. Why? Friday night, and I'm feeling so good, cause I got the show in the neighborhood. I'm a white man. They call me honky. But I know that I'm a funky. That is right. Uh-huh.
Oh, my God, help me. There goes my Friday night. I got to get a phone call going. Second thought, I don't think I can join you. Tell the people. Man. Ad-lib. Right, baby?
Oh. How do you ad-lib when I listen to that? I hadn't heard that thing in years.
Yeah, I know.
Well, I tell you what. If you want to hear some more Jerry V ad-libbing.
One day, maybe I come in here and a couple of... By the way, don't call me again to do the show. You know how people always go, hey, if you ever need anything, have me on. Don't call me anymore. But, you know, you got to tell them. There is a serious side. Am I right, John?
That's right.
That's right. But I'm talking about the Jew on.
All right, real quick, you actually are going to be at the Comedy Zone.
Yeah, July 6th.
Speaking of serious guy Jerry V, right?
Yeah, right, yeah. Sure. Just working on my image.
July 6th.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out what material to use because it's been canceled three times because of COVID, and I have so much material written. I got a list of things I want to do in life, and I just check off the boxes.
And what you just did was bucket list, right?
That's right. Well, yeah, I guess I called it the V list.
Yes.
So, and my goal is to do a one-hour comedy show here in Charlotte, straight.
Or a second one after this one.
Oh, I'll do a second
one. I mean, after this show. Confidence. This show.
How successful you will be in any endeavor, Bo, is directly related to how easy you are intimidated. Do not be intimidated.
And I'll just end by saying, love, live, and laugh, because...
It's a short pony ride. John, it's great to see you. Bo, thank you so much.
We'll
Charlotte,
do it again.
Thank you.
Hey, come again sometime.
No.
Actually, I'll hold that thought for a minute. I'll come back to that in a minute, because... You're looking at me going, who is that?
Somebody that I know?
Yeah, I think so. We'll get back to that in a minute. But I want to start, first of all, this is the first time you've been in here and seen the dividers, right?
Well, it's a good thing we got these plastic dividers up at the very end of the COVID pandemic. So, yeah, it's good to have them in here.
And,
I mean, it only took 15 months, but it's good.
Well, anybody who comes in lately who hasn't been in a while notices we had the big plastic dividers. We have them in all the Radio 1 Charlotte studios now. But I had to get used to it for a few days.
Yeah, I'm getting the reflection.
Yeah, you get a little reflection going on. And like I was telling Beth when she was here the other day, sometimes when I cue John Moore, I hit that. I go, all right, here's a...
You know. It's like the Gong Show.
It is. But hey, you know, I mean,
hey.
You do what you got to do to get people back in the house. And what do you know? Brett Jensen is here in studio. So it worked, John Moore. It worked. Yesterday, we appreciated having Jerry V in here. And tomorrow is Matt Grant from Fox 46. He's a reporter who has joined us on several occasions. And he is leaving, going to Dallas, going to the Fox affiliate there. And I'm looking forward to talking to him about a guy who basically arrived in Charlotte 5 years ago as a newbie and has lived here and gotten to know the community and kind of a case study of somebody, you know, come here for 5 years. What did you think when you got here? Mm-hmm. What do you think as you leave?
Mm-hmm.
What would you tell yourself 5 years ago when you got here covering things in Charlotte and on and on? But let's talk about Brett Jensen. You had a one-on-one with Dina DiIorio. I like these one-on-ones you're doing because you had one with Gibby Harris,
mm-hmm.
now Dina DiIorio,
mm-hmm.
and a chance to sit down and talk to some of the newsmakers that you've spent a lot of time covering, especially over the last year with the pandemic.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, Dina and Gibby Harris became the two most famous people in Mecklenburg County for the last 15 months. People probably didn't even know there was even a county manager. And to be full disclosure, before I started working at BT, I didn't know there was such thing as a county manager. Never heard of it, never needed to, because I was so knee-deep in sports, I didn't care about politics. And but she is, by far, I think she's not only the most powerful woman in Mecklenburg County, I think she's the most powerful person in Mecklenburg County. And I always say Johnny Harris is the most influential person in Mecklenburg County. But I think Dina's the most powerful person in Mecklenburg County. She doesn't do a lot of sit-downs. She'll do interviews when we talk to her on Zoom calls, you know, and stuff like that. But she's a fascinating character. And, you know, I asked the county if she'd be willing to sit down with me, just like, you know, when Gibby Harris sat down with me for 42 minutes uninterrupted commercial-free that one time live here on WBT. And so I wanted to spend time with Dina, and I spent about 35 minutes with Dina on, what's today, Thursday, Tuesday.
Can I go ahead and promote the next one, the next sit-down?
Yeah, please.
Next week when Brett Jensen will be sitting down commercial-free with Governor Roy Cooper, right?
No. Yeah. Well, you know, Governor Cooper is in Salisbury today at 10 a.m., and I probably would be up there, to be honest with you, if I weren't here right now, because I found out late last night that he's going to be in Salisbury at 10 a.m., and then later this afternoon he's supposed to be announcing something about the $1 million lottery and COVID shots. But that's later this afternoon.
Yeah. So when we come back, I want to talk about some of the moments in this interview with Dina DiIorio. One of them has to do with something that happened in December. And we'll have to properly set this up because people may have forgotten about it. But it had to do with what restrictions were about Thanksgiving from the county, and then what she ended up doing with her Thanksgiving plans. And I have to say,
Christmas plans.
Oh, it was Christmas plans. Okay, so holiday plans. Let's put it that way. Yep. Holiday plans. But I do give her credit because she did not back away from what you asked. She answered it. She basically faced the music on it. So hold that thought. I also need to get to Sam Darnold yesterday because
okay.
Carolina Panthers quarterback did a media session at the OTAs, and he was asked one question towards the end. Actually, I think it was the last question, but it doesn't concern football. It concerns COVID-19. I guess it does. It concerns football.
Absolutely.
When the two interconnect, but this is not something about his performance on the field. This is something actually about his performance off the field, something that he decided whether or not he would do or not. Hint, hint. Brett Jensen's in studio with us this morning. Also later this hour, David Chadwick. Also today, Bill Graham in our final hour, our legal analyst.
Izod has not been part of this for about 20 years. It's Lacoste.
Okay, pink Lacoste. Actually, it's...
You're going to do it.
No, wait. It's on brand for you to correct me. That's perfect, actually. Brett Jensen. Breaking Brett Jensen from the WBT Newsroom, joining me until 10 today. Now, I want to play some clips of this interview you did with Dina DiIorio.
Okay.
Great interview. I mean, she opened up to you about things that I haven't heard her talk to other people about. But that's kind of how Brett rolls with these interviews. That's why I love it when you go out and talk to people. Now, we need to properly set up what she's about to talk about here because there was an incident in December mm-hmm. regarding holiday travel plans. So before we play this, refresh people's memory about how this became a story to begin with.
Yeah, I want to say it was just before December 14th or right around December 14th. And they were talking about stay at home for the holidays. The message of the press conference, the Zoom call between with Gibby Harris and Dina DiIorio was to like tell the reporters, make sure you get out the word only because at that time, COVID was really starting to increase a lot.
Yeah.
And because it was right after Thanksgiving. And so there's like, look, only spend Christmas. They came straight out of the press conference. The opening words from each one were only spend Christmas or the holidays with your immediate family, the people that you actually live with. 15 minutes in the press conference, a reporter has a throwaway question like, oh, how are you guys going to spend Christmas holidays? And Gibby said, oh, I'm going to spend it with my immediate family, just like I told you guys. And Dina immediately goes, oh, I'm going to Durham to see family members. And I was sixth in line to ask the question. And no other reporter brought it up, which to me says a lot. And so I brought it up to Dina about that. And it went national.
Yeah.
And I'm like, big time national. And so yeah, I asked her about that.
Okay, so this is part of the interview with Dina DiIorio, county manager.
Let's talk about the situation that happened at Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
So I just remember thinking to myself, I was like, did I just hear that?
I know what I did. And so, you know, I guess, yeah, I mean, that's a moment I should take back for sure. But, you know, that was a personal decision that I made. But I'm also... if nothing, I'm also very transparent, and I'm not going to not tell the truth. I could have said it differently. As I go back in my mind, I said to myself, you know, you could have answered that question 10 different ways and not have answered it that way, and nobody would have been the wiser. But that's just not the kind of person I am. And so...
well, I think what surprised me the most was I was in queue, and I was like six questions down the line, and no one brought it up. I was like, wait what? But, you know, but...
it's like I talked out of that side of my mouth, and then I talked out of that side of my mouth.
Speaking to the head of the communications department here, when we were talking about you, he said, look, you need to understand this about Dina. Dina wants everything transparent. She wants everything known, and she doesn't want secrets hidden from her, and she doesn't want secrets hidden from the public. Where did that come from? Why? Because that's an anomaly in government.
Because, maybe it's just a function of my personality. I don't know, but... you only get in trouble when you don't tell. I mean, and I think part of it, though, too, I think we learned that, or I learned that a little bit when we had the issue with the cervical cancer screenings. And there were some pieces of information that we didn't tell the public because we were trying to protect people from panic. So there's a fine line that you have to balance between telling the public what's going on, but trying to protect people, you know, people's privacy, as well as making sure people don't panic. And so I think I did feel a little bit like in that situation, we probably could have told more sooner. So that was a lesson learned for me, and I've tried to carry that forward in situations that have come up since then.
I give her credit for facing the music on that question and basically saying it is what it is. I'm not, I would have done it differently if I'd had to do it over again. And even saying that as soon as I said it, I realized where this probably was going to go.
And she, you know, and the thing about Dina is, you know, you heard in that answer, she gave a brutally honest answer when she said, here I was talking out of this side of my mouth and then talking about out of this side of my mouth. And, you know, she was laughing. She had a little, you know, laugh on her face when she was saying it. And you know, you can't always pick that up on radio. But, you know, the thing about Dina, I said the exact same thing about Gabby Harris a long time ago. And Dina's the exact same way. And the reason I respect both of them, you may not like what they have to say. You may not like their actions sometimes. But from a reporter standpoint, they always give you, both of them, always give you real, honest answers. They don't give Roy Cooper non-answer answers. They give real answers, and I respect the hell out of them for that.
Well, and I was saying tongue-in-cheek a few minutes ago that your next big sit-down was going to be with Roy Cooper next week. That's not true. Maybe me saying it will will it into happening. Maybe it will be true.
Well, I tell you what, Bo, keep saying that about me winning Powerball.
Yeah.
Maybe will it to happen.
Well, I've gotten several texts in the last few minutes you were joking about Roy Cooper, weren't you? And I said, yeah. However, if it happens, then I'm going to say, remember where you heard it first.
Yeah.
Right here.
However.
Yeah.
We'll see that however happening.
We'll see. I think it'll eventually happen.
After he leaves office?
Yeah, he may be, 20 years down the line. And he'll say, I don't recall.
That's I don't so remember. That was my...
I wanted to play a clip of that, and because I thought this would be an interesting thing for us to talk about, among other things. There's a new movie called The Eyes of Tammy Faye, which is actually due September 17th, but the trailer was released yesterday, and you heard some of it right there. And this is a Jim and Tammy PTL, mainly focused through the eyes of Tammy Faye, hence the name, The Eyes of Tammy Faye. But this is Jessica Chastain, which if you look this up on the internet, it's amazing how she has transformed into Tammy Faye Baker, and then Andrew Garfield, who played Spider-Man, not most recently, but in the middle two movies within the last few years, he's Jim Baker. But here we have really the first movie that's really taken a deep dive on that whole PTL saga. And David, you have a connection to that from the standpoint of a piece of property.
Yeah, interestingly, they started in 1976. On Independence Boulevard in a warehouse, and the program that they did, the PTL show, just took off and grew larger and larger. So they bought a piece of property on Park Road mm-hmm. from the Thompson estate, F.N. Thompson. It was 25 acres or so, and there they set up their new studios, built a Williamsburg-style huge facility along with a mansion that's there. That became their place of operations for some years, and then Jim Baker's idea was to build a water park on that property. The Huntingtown Farms neighborhood went to him and said, that ain't gonna happen, and we've got a war chest, we're gonna fight you. And that's what caused them then to buy the 2,200 acres in Fort Mill, which then allowed the PTL franchise to expand and grow like never before. During that time period, I was pastor of another church here in town, and we looked at that property on Park Road as a way to have more room for us to grow. So in 1985, I engaged with not Baker. I tried to get to him. I couldn't, but I got to Jim Dortch, his second in command, mm-hmm. and we were able to negotiate purchasing that property on Park Road for our new church home.
Well, and of course, you talked about where they went from there. They went and built the Heritage USA complex down there in South Carolina, and the water park ultimately was
right,
built.
Right, he did build that there.
And then I remember Jerry Falwell going down the slide. I mean, There are so many things that go under that umbrella. And the three of us, having been in Charlotte during that time, we remember this as it happened. It is a story that had captured the attention of America. And there was a PTL retrospective done on, I believe, 2020, about mm-hmm. 2 years ago, mm-hmm. which really dug deep into it. And I'm always fascinated by this because I remember going to see the Christmas lights at Heritage USA. And we all in Charlotte know the Jim and Tammy story really well. Also, towards the end of her life, and I was working with Keith Larson back during this time, Tammy Faye used to come on his show in studio several times. Mm-hmm. So I remember meeting Tammy Faye. And Tammy Faye, at this point in time, this is when she was, you know, going on like the Surreal Life TV show. And she had become really, she'd written a couple of books. And there was a while there where she was very much of a punchline during the PTL days. But then, she had a battle with cancer that ultimately took her life. And you saw a different side of her in her later years. And she wasn't married to Jim Baker anymore. She remarried to was it Messner? Right. Ro Messner.
Right, the builder of all of the Heritage buildings.
Yeah. But this whole thing fascinates me because I knew of your connection to it. And I also am always fascinated by your thoughts on it just being a pastor and that story. We know the tawdry aspects of that and the scandal, but it really is. I mean, if you're from this area from a certain amount of time, everybody's got a story or a memory about PTL and Jim and Tammy Faye.
Yeah, Bo, I would say that those 10 years after 1986 when the Jessica Hahn scandal broke were some of the most difficult years in the life of the church because people really did look upon the church with an askanced view. They thought every pastor's out just to make money. Every pastor's just using this as a front to get whatever they want to get. And it was hard to overcome that for a long period of time. Eventually, of course, over time, people see the genuineness of people of faith. But it was a hard thing to overcome. I will tell you one interesting anecdote that I learned recently from the Billy Graham family, that when Jim Baker was released from prison, he had no money whatsoever. Billy Graham allowed for him to live in a place where he had set aside for his own family, and he lived there for a while. He provided for Jim Baker a car for him to be able to drive around in. It was Billy Graham who helped Jim Baker get back on his feet when he was released from prison.
You'd expect nothing less.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, from Billy Graham, from a guy who, for lack of a better term, did not do, God justice or anything else by what he was doing. And then you have Billy Graham coming in and, for lack of a better term, saving the day and helping him out.
And interestingly, Brett, people ask him, why are you doing that? I mean, he's a scoundrel. He's a thief. He hurt widows and orphans. And his answer was, my job is not to judge people. My job is to love people. And I'm going to love Jim and Tammy Faye Baker, even if they don't deserve it.
Well, look, I talked about your early connection with the property there in earlier days. I want to end here by talking about some news about your current ministry.
Yeah, the new church that I have helped form, Moments of Hope Church, now has a permanent, for the next year, dwelling place at Providence Day School on the corner of Sardis Road and Fairview. And we'll meet there at 10 o'clock on Sunday mornings. Any listener who doesn't have a church home is looking for a church home, please come 10 o'clock this Sunday at Providence Day School. A new beginning for our church, actually, as we continue to place our roots deeply in this community, and I hope above hope that I am a man that's genuine, authentic, and not like a Jim Baker than anything else.
Congratulations on that, Bob. That's a big deal. Congratulations.
No, thank you. It is a good step forward.
Around here, you are the hope guy.
I always want to give hope to people, Bo. You know that I believe with all of my heart that you can go through the worst crises in the world, but rejection is God's redirection. He's always got a purpose. And, as we joke every week, if the sun comes out in the morning, there's always hope. And the sun did come out this morning. Let's live today to the full.
And what color is your shirt today, David?
Mine is Carolina blue. Bo, yours is that ugly.